Welcome to the Fierce Female Network. I'm your host, Fierce Manson, and today is Thursday, baby. Listen, it is June the 9th, 2022, 5:30 p.m. on the Central Standard Time Zone and 6:30 p.m. on the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Y'all know what I'm going to say. The Eastern Standard Time Zone is the time zone that rocks my socks off, honey. And you know I got to push it up to the ATL, to my home team. I must give a shout-out to my home team. Fierce Nation International, now listen, Fierce Nation International is based in New Orleans, the UK, Germany, East and West Africa. I do have members in India. My honorary member is Karan Bhattati. Now listen, this show is being brought to you by Gumbarum, Gumbarum.com. It's G-U-B-B-A-R-U-M, Gumbarum.com. We do have two different Gumbarum flavors. One is infused with vanilla and one is infused with coconut. The vanilla is Gumbarum Gold. The silver is Gumbarum Silver infused with coconut. Now listen, the CEO of Gumbarum is Steve Gum. Now listen, y'all know I've been crying all last week, because Steve is not here with me. So listen, I'm running the show. Steve is gone. Y'all know where Steve is at. I've been telling y'all, Steve is in New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, that's God Heaven Truth. He's there today. He will be there until June the 12th. You all know the expo is going on, New Orleans Wine and Food Expo. Now, that man just, I tell you, I don't know what to do with that man. I don't know what. He just left me. He didn't say take the show on the road. He just, you know, packed all his stuff up and say, Fear, I'm going down to New Orleans to the expo. So, y'all, he's at the Wine and Food Expo. He's sucking down crawfish, and I'm telling you, drinking and everything. But listen, y'all know I like to entertain. Y'all know Mama. Mama likes to entertain. Now, listen. The Wine and Food Expo is going on today through June the 12th. It is the Wine and Food Expo, and so Steve is down there. He really is down there. You guys can get a sample and a sip of Gumbarum. Everything is set up. You can enjoy. It's going to be fantastic. Now, listen, the Wine and Food Expo is at 900 Camp Street. I'm not going to do my marching song. I'm trying to be nice. I have a guest on today, and I can't wait to talk to him. So now, listen, y'all. It's 900 Camp Street. I ain't going to march today, none of that. So you all have to find your way. I'm not giving no GPS directions. Just punch it in on your vehicle, okay? Now, listen, y'all know Bob likes to entertain. So, listen, I'm trying to be nice. Listen, Mr. Magoo, sit down back there. Sit down. We got company today, y'all. Sit down. And put my rum bottles down. Now, y'all cool out and be nice. We're going to learn something today, y'all. Sit down and be cool. Now, listen, I have a attorney. Now, listen, really, I'm really honored today. Now, listen, I'm going to tell y'all a little backstory. I met a gentleman, he's an attorney. His name is Garrick A. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, F-A-R-R-I-A, Faria. Now, listen, I was really, really, really honored. I said, oh, my goodness, he's a full-time practicing attorney and a self-published author. Listen, y'all, now he's on the show with us today. Y'all be nice in the chat room. Don't cut up. We ain't having no monkey shining in the chat room, so y'all be nice today. We have a really nice guest, and I cannot wait to find out what is going on. Now, listen, he's a author. He has a book. Hi, Garrett. How are you doing?
Hey, how's everybody doing out there? Hopefully everybody's doing all right. And a shout out to Brother Steve in my hometown of New Orleans, Louisiana. That's what's happening.
Oh, well, thank you. So you were born and raised in New Orleans?
So I was born in New Orleans, moved up to Cincinnati as a young man, but I would always, you know, come back home as often as I could. Both my parents from New Orleans, so family would either come up to hang out with us for the summers, or me and my brother, and eventually my little sister, when she came along, would go home and spend time. And then I moved there after graduate school, and then moved back right in time for Hurricane Katrina for work. So always been close to the city. That's my city. And I'm excited about being here to talk a little bit about it today, for sure.
Yes, and I do want to find out about the work that you published. And so the book, it's Buku New Orleans, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay. That's my third self-published book. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. It's your third self-published. And so this one is 18 poems.
Yeah, yeah. So it's actually a 540-page book full of short stories, a couple of plays, some essays, and they had 18 poems in it. And so then I took the 18 poems and connected with a brother who helped produce some tracks for me. And now that spoken word album is available wherever you can get music downloaded, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, iTunes, all of those places. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Now tell me a little bit about the book. So different individuals that's listening in, we do have a lot of listeners that do listen in internationally. We do have guys that join me every single day from the UK, the Netherlands, and Germany. And so for those that's listening in, and we do have listeners from India. So if you can kind of explain to them about the book, the setting, and, you know, the history of the book and why you wrote the book.
Yes, ma'am. So in a nutshell, you know, I like to think of this as an exploration of Black life in New Orleans across time and space from what we would call and what I would call a fiercely Africana perspective, right? I mean, you can't really talk about Black life in New Orleans and not make direct connections to the African culture that we experienced on the continent and some of that African culture that has survived. Once we got over here, in terms of music, in terms of food, in terms of how we talk and what we talk about sometimes and how we commune with each other and vibe and click with each other. And so, like I said, this was the third book. The first book it's called American Terrorism. That's a brief history of the lynching of Black folks in the United States. And that book was heavy, right? Talking about those generational butt kickings that we took and how the laws either contributed to that or, you know, was supposed to be set up to kind of stop some of that stuff, but really didn't. That was tough. And then my second book is a deep dive of Cheikh Anta Diop's African Origins of Civilization. And that was equally tough, right? That was, you got to be razor sharp when you're dealing with Cheikh Anta Diop and any of his ideas. And so this book was a joy, right? This was, I got to let my hair down, got to let my beard down, got to clown a little bit. And it got sparked off by a pretty interesting story. But I'm in the midst of a creative explosion, I guess you could say. And, you know, this book was a joy to write. I like to think I wrote it in conjunction with our ancestors. They were over my shoulder and, you know, in my head and my heart and my soul. And they helped me put all of these stories together. Again, different ways, essays, short stories, poems, a couple of plays. And then putting the spoken word album together was the next logical step. And I'm looking at doing some other stuff with some of the stories in this book before I move on to my next book.
Okay. So the book that we're focusing on today, is it the 18 poems, the one that we're focusing on today? I do have a little piece of information that I'm going to play for the audience a little bit later. I have Saratoga, and so I'm going to play that one a little bit so they can get to hear your work and they can get up close and personal listen to it, Saratoga Street.
Yes, ma'am. So 1208 Saratoga Street is really just a rendition. So I got a bachelor's degree in African American and Africa Studies from Temple University. I got a master's degree in African American and Africa Studies from The Ohio State University back in the 90s. Eventually went to law school and kind of talk about that in some of the work in Buku, New Orleans. And so the 1208 Saratoga Street is a bit of a history lesson, right? It's a historical retelling of the race massacre in New Orleans in 1900 in the saga of Robert Charles and kind of how all of that went down. A lot of people may not be familiar with it. Those who read Ida B. Wells Barnett's Mob Rule in New Orleans, and those who may have heard about the story, this is just a historical retelling of that. So you'll find some history throughout these poems on the spoken word album and certainly throughout the book. You'll find some humorous stuff You'll find some interesting stuff, a lot of memoir, some historical stuff, but that's how the book itself, Buku New Orleans, is set up. I mean, the poems are just a reflection of that.
Okay. So now you went over that a little quick. And so now tell me a little bit. Yeah, you went over that a little bit quick. And so I do really enjoy Black history, and I want to absorb the information that you're giving out. And so when it comes to New Orleans, you said a lot. You said a lot, so I kind of want to dissect a little bit. And so you being the teacher that you are, I'm going to be the student because I'm learning as well. I'm going to be the student. And so, so I'm looking at this as, to me, we're having a history lesson or a history class because it's about African-American history. And so, and
yes,
you're talking about the Black life in New Orleans. Now, listen, let me tell you something. My husband was born and raised in Louisiana, and so whenever there's a discussion about Louisiana, and so I had an opportunity to live in Louisiana for a few years, and I love it, love it, love it. And so,
very nice.
Yeah, it was my first experience. And I'm gonna tell you something. Can I be honest with you? At first,
I was a little.
Yeah, I was a little chicken. I was kind of scared to go to Louisiana. I don't know if anybody ever told you that before.
Sometimes
I get that sometimes.
Yeah, I get that sometimes for a number of different reasons.
Yeah, I was a little chicken, to be honest. And that's the first time I openly admitted that to anyone. So, and my husband, like I said, was born and raised in Louisiana. And they have, his family has a lot of property in Louisiana, a lot of air property, and still do have a lot of property down there. And so, you know, we went down there, and I was just floored to find out, just to say a little bit, I was floored to find out he was living in Chicago and had property in Louisiana, and had never lived in his own house. It was just kind of wild to me. I said, well, listen, man, we got to go to Louisiana. You know, forget my fears about what I've heard about all the voodoo and stuff. You know, I said, we got to go down there, you know.
Right.
And so, that was my fear. That was just one of my fears because I heard so many stories. Yeah, but it was nothing like that. It was nothing like that. But we got down there, come to find out I loved it, enjoyed it, love the food. I'm still spoiled to all the great food and the taste. You know, it's just phenomenal. It's just great. And so now Black life in New Orleans, you know, I know a little bit about the culture when it comes to African-Americans and so now break it down for me about Saratoga Street. I want to stick to your work. And so what happened, what happened on Saratoga? Just let me learn from you. Tell me a little bit more about Saratoga Street.
Yes, ma'am. So it's a familiar story, right? It's a brother named Robert Charles, who was originally from Mississippi and got into a gunfight over there, came to New Orleans to get away from all of that. Was working, doing his thing. He was actually a pro-Black brother, a Pan-African nationalist. He worked for one of the prominent Pan-African nationalists around at that time, a gentleman named Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, who was actually a bishop in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, right? Bishop Turner had a newspaper, and Robert Charles made his one of his side hustles was selling that newspaper. At any rate, him and his buddy went to go visit some ladies, and the you know, neighborhood or folks in the neighborhood called the police. The police show up, and you know, they get into it with these two brothers. And Robert Charles was, like I said, he was a Pan-African nationalist. He was already on the run from a gunfight, and he wasn't about to get George Floyd, right? So this is, let me back up a little bit. This all went down between July 26th, July 27th, and it kind of wrapped up by July 28th, 1900. So we're not talking about, you know, 2014, 2015. We're talking about 120 years ago. Our ancestors still been dealing with this. And so they tried to physically accost Brother Charles for absolutely no reason. And as we would say, they picked the right one on the right day that day. A fight broke out. And, you know, Charles had a pistol, and he wound up killing two of the police. Then he goes on a run to up, you know, he's in uptown New Orleans, that same uptown that, you know, Mystical claims and Juvenile and them claim and Lil Wayne and all them claims, same part of town, uptown New Orleans. And a hunt is on. And kind of like, you know, the story of the brother who was in the Marines, and, you know, he kind of went off into the woods. They tried to blow him up into being, this was a recent story. I'm trying to remember the brother's name. It's slipping my tongue at the moment, but this is a familiar story. So kind of like that brother they did a couple of years ago, Christopher Dorner, I think was his name. This is Christopher Dorner back in 1900, right? The newspaper, there was two papers at the time, the Daily Time or the Daily Picayune and the New Orleans Times, got a hold of the story, and they just, you know, ran with it. And this brother went, you know, from being a brother defending himself, right, against police brutality, to being, you know, basically Dadon Kamathi and the Mau Mau, or any other Nat Turner, 1900 Nat Turner, 1900 Denmark Beasy, or somebody like that. And then he wound up killing three more white folks before it was all said and done. That came, you know, they were trying to bum rush him, trying to shoot him, trying to kill him. The mayor had ordered a militia to hunt this brother down, called them special police. These weren't even trained police. These were just, you know, white folks that was on the hunt. And he eventually held up at a yellow house that was located at 1208 Saratoga Street. So that's why the poem had gotten that name. They eventually burned him out. He died, you know, with his rifle in his hand. But they went left, right? And by they, I mean the white nationalists that were on the hunt for him. You know, at one point in time when they finally popped him like once or twice, and then they surrounded him, his dead body inside the house. They shot up all of the bullets they had in whatever guns they had. Then they dragged the dead body outside and made a mockery of it. They kind of paraded it around, just like they did in another, you know, in another ancestor in the book. I didn't get a poem about this particular ancestor who was, his name was Squire Broscoopy. They had Squire's dead body sitting up at Jackson Square. So if y'all ever go to Cafe Dumont, y'all go to Jackson Brewery, y'all go to St. Louis Cathedral, right there they had another dead African's body posted up. But that was back in the 1830s. So you jump 70 years later to 1900, they did the exact same thing to Robert Charles. Didn't put him up on a pike and didn't chop his head off and that kind of thing, but they shot up his body. And the white folks weren't, you know, they weren't satisfied with that. And so they went around the rest of the city just snatching up black folks, beating the heck out of some, killing other ones, burning black folks as houses, destroying property. I mean, it really was a race massacre. So again, this happened July 26th. July 27th, it kind of died down by July 28th. And then a couple of weeks later, the black folks who were around and survived had called Ida B. Wells. She was a journalist, right? Hopefully y'all can look her up. A lot of the work she did around was highlighting lynchings and race massacres at the turn of the 20th century, 1899, 1900, 1901. She came to New Orleans to run an investigation. She published her findings in Mob Rule in New Orleans as a pamphlet. You can still easily get a copy of that to read up on it. And there are a couple of books about Robert Charles, one called The Ballad of Robert Charles and one called Carnival of Fury. I can reach over and pull those books off my shelf. Probably should have had them closer to me, but that's essentially that story. So I walked through it, giving some details about it, some history about it. A lot of folks, you know, come to New Orleans looking for the parties, come to New Orleans looking for the bounce music, come to New Orleans to load up on po' boys and daiquiris and all that stuff. But our history and our culture is deep. It's rich, and it's not necessarily all fun and games.
Wow. Check that out. That is something, and that is so true. That is so true. You know, we go to New Orleans, you know, for the party and for so many other things. But as you said, the history and the culture is really rich. So, wow, that's really something. I'm going to play a little bit of Saratoga Street, And I'm telling you,
I
did look on Amazon. I'm telling you, you have a lot of great reviews on your books on Amazon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So I'm going to play a little bit of Saratoga Street. So you guys, you heard the story of what Saratoga Street is about, and you're going to get an opportunity to take a listen right now. And so I'm going to cue this up. We're going to
listen. Anybody else?
Hey, this is Nate Garrett.
Yeah,
love
man.
You, brother. Proud of you, man. and I appreciate you so much. I've learned from you throughout the years. And I was thinking about it as we were going over. I think when I used to teach, one of my lectures came from you. And no Tucson, no purchase.
Whoa.
Never had to teach the Louisiana purchase. But I remember our conversation around that and around the history of New Orleans. I know I attribute that quote to you, no Tucson, no purchase. But
wow.
Let me ask you this, man. One of the things I'm most impressed with is the way that you, I guess in my estimation, kind of unboxed yourself. So I always say if you can write, you can write anything. Like you can write an essay, you can write a song, you can write a poem, you can write a play. If you're a writer, you can just write. So I was really, really impressed with the way you just stretched out, right?
Yeah.
So what was your decision? Was it a hard decision for you to do that? Did it come natural? Because I think sometimes you have to consider how people see you. So I know you as a heavyweight scholar. You understand what I'm saying? And sometimes if you're a poet, it doesn't really look like you're a historian. But so how did you make your decision to kind of just stretch out? And was it hard for you?
No, it wasn't hard, man. I love you, brother. And like I said, if we do get a chance to talk about who shot the Lala, you hold a special place in that story, man. It wasn't hard at all because, like I said, I just was fired up. And, you know, I felt like I was in touch with my ancestors.
On the run from a gunfight in Mississippi, Robert Charles was forced to code switch. Black folk back then couldn't take no risk. When he first arrived, he stuck to his plan. He only bought his clothes from the same white man. He kept to himself, not too many could even recognize his face. When the shit went down, his media depictions and descriptions were all over the place. But that's the way he wanted it and needed things to take him. Because he was a Pan-Africanist. He even joined the African Emigrationist Society from 1887 to 1888. See, if you sat Charles down and let him rap, it would be a burner, dropping gems, spitting juice. Hell, he made a living by selling the Voice of Mission with Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. This was the final call of that day. Baby Muhammad speaks. Charles studied and worked and wrote and wrote and wrote to elevate himself to help liberate his people. One day, Charles and his homeboy Leonard went to call on some ladies. They were just chilling, not acting crazy or shady. But sure enough, them boys rose up, causing confusion with attitudes and physical connection, hollering out Charles and old Leonard, both fit the description. Charles was a brother, not about to get rousted. He stood his ground and didn't bow, fighting. The cops started grilling, what you men doing? How long you been around here? They grabbed Leonard by the collar. Tried to grab Charles by the ear. Big mistake. Charles broke the grip and grabbed that 38. Questions still abound. Who shot the first round? Well, later on, the white cops didn't flood. They said, for a big black end like Charles, got it, got caught. First cops both got shot. Later on, died. Charles took off. He was hit below the hip. Litter was on. He stood there like a statue. Scared as shit. Other cops showed up and started sweating on Litter. He gave up a name, Robertson was all he could say. Meanwhile, Charles made it back to the gate, wrapped up his leg, grabbed his breech load, lever action Winchester. Yeah, another 38. It wasn't for long that the search was on. As Juvenile would say 100 years later, them uptown spots been hiding the search for Brother Charles and went on block by block. Charles knew what it was, he certainly didn't fret. He was laying low and chilling around General Taylor by Carranza Lane. Same time, the cops started grilling the ladies. And one in particular, that one little chick, called her Virginia. She lied on Charles, whipped up some phony tears and cried on Charles. Said he was a woman beater, spit on her, and cursed us on me. The cops took that and ran, started calling him the Black Fiend. But now the whites were set and ready to put Charles' head on the shelf. No girl, she told those lies to protect her own self.
when the out-of-work whites already salty heard the end got out on them, they went berserk. It was bad enough that up the ends wanted to keep the street cars in the grading, which they thought was pure fiction. But the end killing the cops? Hell no. That's taking it too far. Damn them politicians and all their dudes. It's time for revenge. It's time for the kill. Meanwhile, Charles consists of heat. He broke camp, left the crib, ended up at 1208 Saratoga Street. Cops were able to find him. Somebody in the neighborhood obviously downed him. But now, though, the press had blown up the story and twisted the facts, lied on Charles to make him look like a monster, all bloody and gory. Neither the lies nor the onslaught against him had ceased. The mayor activated a militia, called them special police. As for Charles, it was no matter. His days would be short. This night would be long. He must have had cube in his hand. Mumbled to himself. Once again, son. The cops approached that house to finish this kill mission, not realizing that Charles had taken up a sniper position. A few moments later, two more cops got blocked. Charles added to his tally. One named Porty, and there they were. The backup cops up the block were rousting a different black. 120 years later, they still don't know how to act. Back at the ranch, a civilian named Brumfield was killed. Now Charles was up to five. Five dead white folks. No way in hell he gets out alive. He knew that, understood that, and made a conscious decision to take as many out as he could, as quickly as possible, with deadly precision. So he knew he was ready and likely to die. He made peace with the Creator, his ancestors, and then looked to the sky. It was a hot, muggy night. Uptown New Orleans, the year 1900, 25th of July. The cops, the militia, the mob, knew exactly where Charles was, but knew they had to find a way to knock that brother off. So they came up with a plan, without a sign or a powder. Yeah, that's it. Let's burn that in now. Right around 5 o'clock that evening, they doused that big yellow house with enough kerosene that Charles could barely breathe. He could no longer fight, barely manage to scratch. Cold-blooded cops met Portia's brother like that fateful match. The plan worked. Charles was holding his breath, smoke, then he had to stop. Finally lifted his head, then he got popped. Punk that got him, a white dude named Norad. He's a special police militia and a damn Tulane manager. So much for do no harm. He broke that sacred oath with no sweat, no second thoughts, no cause for alarm. But we should be clear on how these contradictions always get resolved. After Rodney King, Dr. Winter told us there are no humans involved. Some of y'all may scoff, want me to pause, saying I'm too hard on America, but let's let bygones be bygones. Hell, just look at what they did to our dear brother Charles. They showed no mercy, threw everything at him, showed it and pulled it. They shot his dead body up so much they ran out of bullets. Then Charles died lit up, yet still clutching his rifle. That revolutionary spirit couldn't be touched. Nah, it couldn't be stifled. Their wives just hated that. Their contempt they refused to hide. With empty discarded clips littering the ground, they dragged Charles' corpse outside. The assembled whites there were quiet for a second or two, of course. Then they yelled, screamed, shouted, and hollered. Some cursed that spit upon and tried to kill the corpse. Their heart twisted by rage, revenge, joy, and glee. An angry white mob met at a statue of Robert E. Lee. For them, Charles got off way too easy, and no one was sorry. Then they went about hunting Africans like they were used to bark. The mob felt cheated. The carnage Charles suffered would be repeated. That unquenched revenge began to gnaw and gnaw and gnaw. They unleashed it at all, any and every African they saw. July 27th then was bloody as hell. Not too many survivors lived to tell that tale. The ones that were still around caught our beloved ancestor, our sister, Ida B. Wells. She did a thorough investigation from top to bottom and found what we still know today. The cops, the media, the white mob are all black. She found that with Charles now dead and his body degraded, the bloodthirsty whites were high and elated. In the governance structure, though, the reaction was mixed. The black bourgeoisie were relieved. The black masses were pissed. For them, the praise songs came easy. For them, he was their Dessalines, their Prosser, their Swipe, their VZ. His shots rang out across this lawless nation, letting it be known that we still demand liberation. Paleface has killed his body, his flesh, couldn't touch his skin. Now untold numbers of us are filled to the brim with him. In the New Orleans, Africans today owe a debt to that soldier who decided enough was enough. Decided finally to take a stand, strike a blow, get a licking, change how that youth was the same most going to go. He fought for himself, fought against that mystical ogre, fought against white supremacy, and did all that right there on Saratoga.
Wow. So, guys, that is Saratoga Street, Saratoga Street. I am telling you, and we're pretty much out of time. That went by very, very quickly. There was a lot of information.
Yes, ma'am, it did.
Yeah, wow. I'm telling you. So I was listening to the story, and, you know, you were saying how they shot his body so many times they ran out of bullets. That's just...
Yes, ma'am.
You know, that's yeah. Just so... Wow, that is horrific.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. But, you know, but like I said, that's like not getting up off of George Floyd's neck. That's like kicking in the dough on Breonna Taylor or gunning down Ahmaud Arbery, right? That's the same soup that's reheated. And my only question to all of us is when we going to knock them damn pots over, because that soup is getting old.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And so I do want you to give out your information as far as your website, where people can find more information about you. And, of course, you're going to come back on next week. We're going to continue this discussion. It's a really great discussion. I was going to do a discussion some time ago. I'm not sure if you would be interested in diving into a discussion about the deconstruction of the N-word and the whole history around that. I'm not sure if you'd be interested in entertaining
yes,
the discussion. Such
I,
as
I
that.
Definitely
okay.
would. Just
okay.
let me know. Just contact me. I definitely would.
Okay,
folks can get information on the books at www.farrialawbooks.com, FarrialawBooks.com. And then the music is the album is called Po' Boys and 190 Octanes. That's a good New Orleans name, right? You can get that wherever you can download any music. Like I said, Apple Music, YouTube, it's on Spotify. It's hitting a couple of playlists, so it is out there. It should be anywhere you would be able to download any music at all.
Wonderful. Awesome. And so I do want to thank you once again for coming on today, and we're going to continue discussion on next week. I'm going to have you come back. We're going to continue to talk about the history and the culture of New Orleans, and we're going to dig into some
yes,
more
ma'am.
Of your work. And we're just going to continue discussion. We're going to have an ongoing discussion.
Awesome.
It was very, very educational. Very educational. So thank you so much. And, guys, this is going to be a wrap. I'm pretty much out of time.
Right.
And so he's going to come back on next week. I will have it posted the day and the time. It's going to be either Tuesday or Wednesday evening. And we're going to continue this discussion, guys. And so y'all know it's been a Stone Cold Blast. I will be back later on this evening. It's going to be a blast.
You motivated. You motivated. You winning.